bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by Wired Tree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Weird Things podcast. I am your host, as always, every single week, Bryce Castillo, joined, as always, every single week with Brian Brushwood.
You know, the bit gets less funny the more true it becomes. I'm just saying. Yeah.
And Justin Robert Young.
Yeah, live from Iowa, covering the biggest, out here on assignment. I made it to work. Just want to let everybody know.
Here's the hierarchy. You got the Iowa caucus. Slightly more interesting is the current impeachment of the sitting president. Slightly more interesting is the Weird Things podcast. So here we are.
Exactly.
That's right.
You know, I'm making it here for you, friends, the Weird Things faithful.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We've got a scenario for you guys. We need a little bit of help. We need a little bit of help.
All right, go ahead.
Ready.
In the
you know what? I have $391 million of help ready to go. There's just one thing I need.
You just need $30 for the taxes.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. and have that all come in Amazon gift cards, please and thank you.
We actually need some help in Tahoe, California, the Tahoe region of California.
What's the matter in Tahoe? What is the lake not blue enough? Is the powder not skiable enough? Is the Reno not Vegas enough? I mean, I don't get it. What could be wrong in Tahoe?
So we're actually going to go back in time. This is inspired by true events. November 2018. We're going back to November 2018. Not too far long ago.
The 2018ers.
And we got a call. Here we are in the California Highway Patrol office, the CHIPS offices. And someone has asked for help. Someone has broken into their home.
I do like the fact that in the chat room, they're already just saying spiders. Okay, so we're sitting at Chips HQ, scratching off lottery tickets, quoting our favorite family ties moments. And then suddenly the phone rings and I'm sorry, you need what?
Yeah, someone's broken into the house. The alarm on my house is going off. We need to send someone over there. There's a break-in. Someone's gone into my house, broken into my house.
Listen.
And this is under the purview of CHIPS.
Justin, I'm almost done scratching off this bingo lottery card. They make them intentionally complicated so that they take up a lot of time to do. It's a little bit like grading homework, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to win $5. I'm going to need you to go down the unbelievably beautiful Vista Road. Turn left at the sapphire blue golden pond. I'm going to need you to go past all the gorgeous wet redwoods. I'm going to need you to ski the double black diamond over there with a Merlot in hand. And then I'm going to need you to...
With the Merlot is
Then I'm going to need you to take two or three wives and become a Mormon because this is in Salt Lake City. And then I think that's where it's at.
I do that.
All right. So you show up to the scene of the crime. What do you do? What do you do? You're at the broken-in house.
Also, I just showed up. I was like, you know what? Turns out it was only $2, which was a bummer because this is a $10 ticket.
Sure, yeah. All right, so immediately I step boldly, as the handbook suggests. I put both hands on my hips, and I say, hey, knock it off! and I just wait to see whether or not there's any reaction.
You maybe hear a little bit of stirring, but it seems like it's far on the other end of the house.
I tap Justin on the shoulder twice and I whisper, I rolled 18 on charisma. Let me try. Yeah. And then I do the exact same thing and say, hey, knock it off. But for reals this time,
the stirring seems to have faded.
Ugh, doggone it.
All right, so I look to Brian. I'm like, hey, this is going to take evasive maneuvers. So I ask him to follow me, and I take one step. I put both of my hands up.
Karate style?
Combat ready position. Yeah. And then I start strafing into the into the house.
I reach into my pocket and look for a nickel as I comment loudly to Justin on how nickels are better than quarters, because you would think those serrated edges scrape off the silver stuff, but they don't. They make it real messy. You want the regular edge of a nickel.
Yeah, the unperfect.
Or a penny.
Oh, a penny for sure.
I can't hear what Brian's saying because I'm too busy strafing. Because I brought my strafe game. I worked all summer on it, so now I'm really getting to debut it, and I feel really, really good as I strafe into the house. But I do have this lingering thought, almost subconsciously saying, like, yeah, I would have thought a quarter would have been better.
All right, you very professionally strafe through the house. Justin Crabby Young, Officer Crabby, strafes through the house. You've cleared the house. The house is empty, but you do see signs of activity in the kitchen.
Also, I scrape off under the B7. I scrape that one off.
Go for the B7. Always go for B7.
I take a look into the kitchen, and I give a very quizzical, what have we here?
And then one of the assistant officers, one of the assistant police officers shows up and says, it looks like they stole some bread and some fruit.
I use sniff.
You sniff what used to be bread and fruit in the kitchen, but you find none.
I'm like, Justin, I think there was bread and fruit in here.
Is there any other signs of distress throughout the kitchen, Bryce?
The door is left ajar. It looks like if somebody was here, they left, maybe a little hastily.
So this, does it look kind of like a busted up? Like, are there broken things around?
Did a fight go down?
It looks a little turned over. It looks a little turned over, but you wouldn't expect that in the kitchen. But yeah, it does look like that someone's turned the place over.
'Cause I got a little pet theory. And I'm using that very deliberately. Brian, I don't believe that this break-in was conducted by a human at all.
Wait a minute.
It was probably some weird kind of animal.
Well, name just two animals that it might have been. One with a bunch of legs and one with no legs at all. I dare you.
Brian, if we immediately started looking for spiders and snakes, then eventually we would face charges of profile.
Okay, so I go to the piano.
Now I'm just stopping random spiders on the road, and I violated their spider rights, and I'm just looking at all these snakes, and they're calling me a pig, and I'm like, well, hey, look, I'm just following the program.
I go to the nearest piano and begin to play the 1960s Spider-Man theme.
and suddenly your radios crackle with excitement. Boys, come in. We've got a new break in. We need you to go over to the park.
I turn to Justin, I look him right in the eye, say, I'll get the Merlot. And then I go over and I get the Merlot.
We need you to go to the park next to Lake Tahoe for us.
I said, well, Brian, there's only one thing left to do. And we both put our hands up in karate position and begin strafing out of the house.
you make your way out to Lake Tahoe and you find this scene, another break-in, but now at a car.
Justin, if I'm not mistaken, this looks like another break-in, but at a car.
Yeah. You know, Brian, I'm glad we didn't immediately start rousting about all the snake dens and spiders.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out any way that either a spider or a snake would be able to rip out that window the way it looks like it's ripped out.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're looking at an image of an SUV where the back passenger window has been just mangled.
More of a crossover, but I'm there with you in spirit.
Brian, this would take some real power. I'm going to say that we are probably on the lookout for some kind of deer or moose.
Oh, I was thinking like a wildcat. This has mountain lion written all over it. Look, man. Oh, geez, Louise. Except this one, like the door is physically. Is this a Bigfoot attack? Like if Bigfoot were to attack a crossover, this is what it would look like.
It is the Weird Things podcast. That's a possibility.
Yeah, Brian. This doesn't look like a wildcat to me. That this looks slightly bigger.
The door looks like it's been ripped off the hinges, but do we think somebody ripped it off or smashed into it or what?
Yeah, I think it could be. It just got hit so hard that the whole frame popped out. Right?
What about a bear? Do we think it's a bear?
Bear's also a possibility. I think maybe it was that old rumbly tumbly bear walking around causing trouble.
He was like, I'm just on the run from the coronavirus. Ah, I love honey.
Yeah, exactly. Let's not get political. I think bears definitely a possibility.
Oh my goodness. This is an APB. All everyone return back to the CHP headquarters. All points bear. Everybody return back to the CHP headquarters at Donner Pass. We have an alert. We have a burglar trying to break in right now.
No. We have actual video of a bear on his hind legs opening the door like your high roommate coming in to in front of the vending machines. Oh my God.
And he pops in and he looks around and he just makes himself at home. So this is a big deal in Tahoe.
This is a big deal in Tahoe, as if it's not a big deal everywhere. Move over, Mr. President. I'm sorry.
So this was back in November. This is part of a wave of bear incidents.
Bears turning to a life of crime.
Yeah.
You know, back when I was around the bear community really respected the laws and they would stop at a red light. But now these delinquent bears, they're just ripping all these doors off the hinges.
We've got some footage of the kitchen.
Did you say the bear area community? Is it like the Bay Area?
The bear area? The bear community. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the kitchen break-in, that was actually someone caught a video of a bear breaking in, getting food. Because the bears get very brazen when it is in this time of year, the November time, when they're getting ready for hibernation. They just get super brazen and show up in human territory.
They get brazen and they want them raisins.
Here's a bear in the parking lot of a Safeway, just trying to figure out how these carts work.
He's just like, my very existence undermines the title of this store. It's an unsafe way.
So basically the residents of Tahoe just have to make double sure that they are parked in the correct places and just hope that a random bear on a hunt for that last snack isn't going to come and disrupt them.
Well, there's actually kind of a two thoughts about it, right? There are people don't know what to do, right? Like, there are activists who want to protect the bears who don't like that there are policies in place to, try to disable, disarm, and in some cases kill these bears because they're bears. They're trying to live their life, but of course, bears are very dangerous, and they have the means to maim people very, very grotesquely. So I don't know. It's a very weird intersection of nature and human society where they need to go find food and people keep developing out and building out into nature. I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
This is probably on me to do the research to find out, but I'd be curious to know what the number of bear attacks looks like over time, because if I remember correctly, like 50, 60 years ago, people would go to Yellowstone and they were actually, if I remember right, encouraged to feed the bears and to just open up the windows and say, hi, bear. Like the idea of a bear attack was a very rare thing, but I don't know if I'm misremembering.
Where did that come from then? Like, where did it takes
very quickly. It only takes one or two bear attacks for you to suddenly realize, like, oh, wait, all things being equal, telling humans don't say hi to the bears will never yield in a lawsuit, but not telling that may yield many lawsuits.
From Wikipedia, in the 1990s, bear populations had been decreasing because of increased hunting of bears for sustenance and for trophy prizes. Let's see. The practice is still in place of getting those pelts where it's necessary or legal. More recently, laws have been instated to protect the dwindling population of bears. However, as stated in Return of the Grizzly by David Whitman, these laws have increased the tensions between bears and humans. While this allows the bear populations to recuperate, it also prevents people from killing bears that have invaded their property and killed their livestock.
What about hurting their feelings?
Oh, yeah, that bear gave me the finger. It gave me the
yeah,
third
exactly.
finger.
Yeah, exactly.
Throwing bear claws at a bear claw.
Yeah.
Go away, bad
it's like,
guys.
Isn't this irony?
No laws.
Right in the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Oh my word. Hey, you want to know what else is a surprisingly fun time? Is going on over to patreon.com/weirdthings. If you head on over to patreon.com/weirdthings right now. Boy, howdy, do I have something that is very exciting that awaits you. Yes, inner peace and fulfillment. When you know that you are doing your part to support this weekly guide into the world of weird, thank you to everybody who does it. And if you haven't done it, I mean, what's up?
Yeah, what's up? What are you, some bear? You want us to think you're a bunch of spiders or snakes and spiders in an unholy alliance wrapped up in a bear costume? Yeah. Reveal your true self. Reveal yourself to be a bear and pledge $1 per episode at patreon.com/weirdthings.
It's a roaring good time.
Rawr.
Uh-oh. It's the new item alert.
Bear alert?
It's the new item alert. Folks, we found a new item.
Oh.
Okay.
It's not the burgeoning spider snake romance.
No, not quite.
They're called spider as a unit.
I think those are millipedes. I think it might be like centipedes. So we got a new alert, folks. I just brace yourselves, all right? Because this is important. We found a new item.
Looks like a box. Looks like a box that was at the bottom of the sea, and then everything dried out, and it looks like it was meant to hold fireworks, but they forgot about it for a summer.
Yeah, it does look charred, right?
Yeah, and it looks like there's a little bit of a...
Do you think that's like rot?
It looks like a little bit of, I don't know, like half a PVC pipe or something in the middle.
Oh, interesting. This item is recently found, and... I can tell you it's a little important. It's a little important. What do you think?
Is it the Ark of the Covenant?
I mean, we're looking at it, so I'm going to say no.
Okay. All right.
I mean, a good first choice, though, Brian. That was good because we could have really made some news if you were right.
I mean, there's no evidence that it's not the Ark of the Covenant.
I guess not. It's a real bird box situation.
I really think that that's going to be the next. If I interview any campaign staff for the rest of the month while I'm on the road, I'm just going to try to work. Just first question. Number one, does this look like the Ark of the Covenant?
You're like, no, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. Is there any reason you could think of that it's not the Ark of the Covenant?
Yeah. I mean, listen, you know, obviously tough loss there in Iowa. I think you're really trying to rebound here in New Hampshire. But also, for real, like, give me a reason why it wouldn't be the Ark of the Covenant. Like, I'm just...
Does this look like the Ark of the Covenant to you?
Yeah, I'm just trying to see both sides on this.
So this was a discovery in Chechnya, I believe. No.
Ah, the Chechenian Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Chechenian Covenant.
I believe that's right. Or at least this is a radio.
Chechnya. Hold on. Is this like a desiccated? Is this like a radioactive thing?
No, but I think you're getting You're getting close.
Looks like a bucket of depleted uranium or something.
Really, the question is, how old is it? Obviously, Chechnya is a disputed region in Russia. There's been internal warfare.
It is in Olomouc in the Czech Republic. Excuse me.
Not Chechnya, but the Czech Republic. Czech Republic. Yeah. Got it. Okay. Okay. Still in the communist bloc area. Still could be radioactive.
Okay.
It is weird. Is it a weapon of some sort?
No, it
does. Is it Imagine Dragons if it's radioactive?
No, it seems to have been a functional good.
Functional good. It really does look like just a desiccated. It looks to me that if what you wanted was a block of concrete and you would have just hastily assembled a framework to fill up with concrete and then like you were impatient for it to dry, so you just covered it in gas and lit it and all the wood started to burn off. Mm-hmm. That's what it looks like to me.
So let me ask you a question.
Another angle here.
All right. Yeah, I guess, well, this kind of answers it. Brian, do you think that this was underwater or buried?
Well, now that I see what looks like
looking at a pond.
Yeah, it looks like a well. It looks like they dug a well and this got pulled out of it, or maybe it was dropped into the well.
Yeah. Hey, look at that. You got it pretty much right. So this is a wooden water well. That is pretty old. The wooden object that we were looking at appears to be a crate, but the crate is special. The crate is actually pretty special. It is very likely, at least as far as we found, the oldest
Ark of the Covenant,
the oldest wooden structure, the oldest wooden thing that we know about.
Well, hold on. Why would that survive underwater in a well?
Because it was underwater.
I would have thought that would have sped up the okay, so maybe it's like a high mineral water or something. There's nothing living to eat away at the wood.
It was underground. The well was underground, so it could be that the composition of the water helped out a lot. But if it had been drained, it would have been destroyed.
Right.
Is my understanding. In fact, to restore and preserve this, they're actually going to submerge it in sugar, in sucrose, which will help also try to preserve it.
Sucrose.
So
thank you.
You know that this is the possibly the oldest wooden object. How old do you think it is?
Welcome to Prehistoric Hoarders. This box doesn't serve anyone anything, but they keep holding it around. What's going on?
What do you think, Bri?
Wood goes away pretty quick. It feels like 2000 is about as much as my brain can comprehend some wood sticking around for.
Yeah, back in 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right around there.
The Roaring 20.
Yeah. You know, like that
back,
would be
back when Jesus first started drinking. He finally could rent an ox cart because he was of age.
But it still wasn't like the normal adult price for the ox cart. He still had a few more years.
That's right. They were like, well, insurance, it'll fix over time. And Jesus is like, man, this is bullshit.
All right, so 2,000 years. And what if I told you it was a little older than that?
A little older.
Oh, wow. No, I thought it was going to be shorter than that. What do you say we bumped that bad boy up to 5,000 years? Huh?
Okay, but now we get at the point, how long does it take for wood to become petrified? Like, that's tens of thousands of years, right? Like, petrified wood tends to be 100,000 years.
You just startle it the right way.
or you caress it the right way. Ooh, am I right?
Yeah.
5,000 years is much closer. How did they test this? Using
radiocarbon dating?
Dendrochronological data and some amount of carbon radio dating and looking at the rings of the trunks on the object. They believe that the wood that was used was chopped down in either 5,255 BC or 5,256 BC, 7,000 years ago.
Wow. How remarkable that they're able to say, like, It's either this extremely far along date or this other exactly almost the same very far away date.
Apparently, the rings on the trunk are what give it a very precise estimate.
That would be because there are seasons. Like, the thickness of the rings in the wood would match, sort of like a fingerprint, other known... Wait, but then you would have to have other known trees to match it against. And if this is the oldest wood, would you match it against?
I guess that's where dendrochronological data comes in.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are other trees that are that old. This is the oldest, like, man-made thing of wood that I guess we've found since then.
What do you think
it
was used for?
Probably that are as old.
Is it? Yeah, you think there's an old prospector who was taking naked baths in there as he counted his gold nuggets?
I think mostly it was for naked miner baths. You know, like,
unfortunately, I don't know whether you spell it M-I-N-E-R or M-I-N-O-R, and I'm sure both are equally likely.
I'm pretty positive that we're gonna go with O on this one, Brian. We're just gonna kind of move past it. But I would say that I mean, or some kind of carrying. I don't know, what were wares to sell 5,000 years ago? Like a glass thing, maybe some other goop. You know, like, I think it was there to carry that.
They're you go to the market and it's like, what's this? You're like, I don't know, it's a square made of wood, huh?
Got a wood square for you.
What do you got? I'll trade you a crystal pickaxe for it.
Apparently, there were not signs of settlements in the vicinity of where this well was discovered, and archaeologists believe that the well was an isolated construction that served a number of settlements located at a distance away.
But the well looks gigantic. It's not like they just drilled straight down. It looks like it's big enough that you could swim in it. Or
I wonder how much of that is of the actual uncovering of the well.
Well, if this box is down there, then I guess big enough for that box at the very least.
I think the box. I think the box is the well.
What?
Imagine what kind of prankster the guy who dug the well is, that he didn't do it near any of the settlements. He's like, hey man, you can just dig this by our settlement. Like, nah, fam, I'm gonna be out here in the middle of nowhere. See ya. But by the way, you need to give me back my box because I'm gonna drop it down in the well just for.
Starts
laughs.
Tapping his forehead like, can't steal your water if they don't know where the well is.
Exactly.
So there we go, everyone. New oldest wooden object confirmed. Put on the board. How cheap?
Take that, Regis Philbin.
How cheap?
How cheap was that joke? Very cheap. Right? That was a very cheap shot from Brian to a broadcasting legend.
I just picked the one person I could think of that could handle it.
How cheap do you think you could get a rocket into space?
Theoretically, you get a big enough trebuchet. No, wait. Trebuchets cost money.
You have to buy the trebuchet at the trebuchet store.
Yeah, or buy the
trebuchet. You could probably get it on Prime.
Assembly kit.
Bling Prime.
The cheapest way to get a rocket into orbit. Now, we've talked a lot about SpaceX and how it's... I don't know. They're getting southwards of below 50 million, like maybe 20 million to orbit.
Yeah, Google says a very quick Google launch. Google says 57 million to launch for a SpaceX rocket.
Yeah, but we also know that they're sort of recuperating their investment right now. So like their cost is less than that, but they're
a client side. How much would a client spend to get a rocket up?
I know that NASA has...
How low could we get that?
Grown tired of giving the Russians in Baikonur, Kazakhstan. I think they're up to like $80 million per astronaut that they're sending up to the International Space Station.
Woof.
It's getting very expensive, which is why they're very excited to move back to SpaceX. How much cheaper? Like, we're talking about practical available right now.
We're talking about
this is the floor, and I assume that part of this is that it's going to be a far more manageable number than we might expect. But Bryce, this is to get a whole rocket, because I know that there's like a whole thing that you can get space on a rocket? Like, is this the entire payload, or
we're going to say a payload of 450 pounds of cargo into space?
Okay, the cheapest I could think of that I know about is Virgin Galactic is still, last I heard, they have an airplane, they take the airplane really up high, and then they drop the shuttlecock spaceship one that fires. I believe the fuel literally is old tires. Mm-hmm. It runs on rubber and then it blasts off. And I believe that trip is like $200,000, but it's suborbital space.
And that is not a tourist trip. He's
talking about a rocket. Like you are putting something into space. You're putting satellites into space.
I would be.
Because that number seems to be about right. About $200,000 Galactic will give you a trip in their weird plane.
So if we're talking about a proper rocket that makes it all the way.
Come to Virgin Galactic. Take a $200,000 trip in our weird plane.
It looks weird.
are we talking about
orbit? Hi, I'm Richard Branson. This plane is so weird. Come give me $200,000. We'll ride in it. It's weird.
One for each wing. Don't try to just get one wing, though. It won't work.
It's so brilliant, this plane. Oh, my God. It's the weirdest.
Oh.
All right.
I named my company Inexperienced. What a weird name for space travel. Who would want to go on Inexperienced Airlines? I don't know. It worked once. Why not again? Virgin. Well, our original name was We Don't Know What We're Doing. Fumble Around Clumsily, the airline.
Incel Air.
Our original name was, I swear to God, this never happened.
We're going to offer mobile phone access again, only it'll be called Incel Service. That's what
my Incel phone is. I need to charge my Incel phone.
Your Incel phone.
It only lasts for 30 years.
Okay, so rocket, I'm gonna say, if we're talking about a proper sized rocket to orbit, I would be absolutely astonished if we were able to come up with any justification for it to be less than $2 million.
Less than $2 million. All right, Justin.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we're gonna get some crazy bargain basement number out of this. So I would take the under. I'll take $1 million.
Here's a number for you. How about zero? $0 down with in cell phones. All you need is your dignity.
So there is a startup called Astra. I wonder if we've reported on them or not. They have, quote unquote, emerged from stealth, as TechCrunch calls it. And they are backed by DARPA, and they are doing part of a DARPA flight challenge to find a company, to award a prize to a company that can launch two rockets from two different locations within a certain amount of time. Astra believes, Astra right now says that they can launch profitably, they told Bloomberg, they can launch profitably right now for $2.5 million per mission.
So close to my guess!
And would like to get that down to $1 million per flight.
That is my guess.
That is, it's under. And DARPA is really pushing this because apparently DARPA had actually worked with Virgin and another airline or another rocketry company to try to have fast and responsive, find a responsive launch capability. Because SpaceX, you know, you plan it and it's a big deal. But the idea behind Astra is, as Bloomberg calls it, they want to be the FedEx of space.
So this is for what, microsatellites or human-sized payloads, or do they give an idea as far as scale?
I mean, 450 pounds is what I pulled from this article. I don't know how much that is relative to like a satellite.
I mean, who's to say what the exchange rate between the pound sterling and the euro is going to be? So now that they're decoupled, they Brexited.
Yeah. So awkward now that we have to be in the same community with, like, you know, the couple that broke up, and you're just like, I'm not picking sides, guys. Like, we're still all friends. Yeah.
we've got another rocket startup going on. This is a twofer. It's a rocket twofer. Bam, bam. You ever heard of Skyrora? Skyrora.
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 Can you spell it, please?
They should blast that name into space and never let it come back.
Yeah. Could you use it in a sentence?
Dang it. Skyrora is down. The humanity. Skyrora. They have an interesting approach to building rockets. They have two sort of interesting things. One, they are 3D printing.
They're going to do it blindfold.
What's funny is, like, we were talking about DARPA and all that, and it's like, I just want to create, like, have a weekend event where everybody has to make the most deadly weapon, but they're all made of cardboard, and we call it, like, the DARPA challenge or something.
So Skyrora is 3D printing some of their parts. You can 3D print stuff. You don't have to print it in, like, PLA plastic. You can do it in metal and stuff. Supposedly, this gives them very accurate machining. But they've also developed their own type of fuel.
Wait, fuel? Fuel. So it's not a hydrocarbon petroleum. I know that we've talked previously about the fact that SpaceX has settled on using methane, which is very efficient and also a gas that they can manufacture on the surface of Mars or scoop up from the lakes of Titan.
It is a hydrocarbon. It has hydrocarbon chain lengths between C12 and C15, if that means anything to you.
Is it the, what was the fuel they used in The Martian?
It was poop.
Okay, yes and. Hydrobenzene? Is that what it is? But if it's a new fuel,
it's a new proprietary fuel, it's called Ecocene. It's called Ecocene, like kerosene.
Okay. Is it made by what? Algae or something?
Man, these guys and their names, man. What the hell?
Skyrora.
Like, did we just go with the first guess on all of them? We didn't kick it around the room at all?
Hey, man, here at Flyums McGofar, we take our names seriously.
Yeah, so, that's why we have our proprietary fuel. Go-go juice. the stuff.
You know, now, if you sign up for our rewards program, hooray! Then you can get all the Flyums Go-Go juice you want here at Travel McSpaces.
And do you have your card? No, I left my card back at home. I don't know. Take your phone number.
The bit got too real because hooray would be an amazing name for a rewards program. I'm just so excited. Like, thank you for your purchase. You've earned 50. Hooray!
Ecocene is special because it is made out of plastic waste.
Hold on. Is that one of those things where it sounds really good in a press release, but secretly it's not energy efficient and is not actually?
Well, I guess I don't know the answer to that. They can take 1,000 kilograms of plastic waste and make 600 kilograms of Ecocene fuel. It generates 45% less greenhouse gases to refine. And I guess you could potentially use it as in lieu of other fuels in the future.
I wonder if it's the kind of thing where whatever the process is, you do a little bit of what a math and sort of deduct whatever greenhouse gases were created from the original plastic. Like you do a little bit of accounting mojo, and so it becomes a net negative. Because, like, on the surface, not to be a negative Nelly here, but it's like that's one of those things that is so tasty. It smells like headline bait to me, Justin. And what do your journalist instincts say?
I think your instinct is correct that it's probably one of those things that, especially on a mass scale, might not actually be. I mean, it's like the same thing as recycling, that there are some towns where recycling is actually like a net negative to the environment because it costs so much to get the trash, you know, get the separated trash to the right facility that by the time that you quantify those gains, it really isn't there aside from making everybody feel good that they are contributing to the environment, which I guess is certainly a some kind of quantifiable benefit.
And
I don't know, though. Yeah. The only question is with this is like something tells me that proprietary is a more important part of that sentence than cheap or efficient.
I think it's because there is a standard for jet fuel. It seems like there's a jet fuel A, and I think because this is outside of it,
that's interesting.
I don't know anything about
like for example, you could not open up a gas station and sell instead artisanal of diesel gas. fuel, sell vegetable oil. But there are people who have retrofitted their diesel vans to run on vegetable fuel. So you add that word proprietary. Now all of a sudden it's like, okay, we're outside of this established ecosystem and we're able to run on our own thing, which has its own benefits, et cetera, et cetera.
And I don't know it very well could be that, you know, it costs more to make it. Something on their website that I found, it seems to be that they want to make a process where they can install the refining machinery in places where the trash would be, as well as creating, quote, machine vehicles capable of retrieving waste from the oceans and converting it into fuel on the ship.
Yeah, I don't even mind. Let's say ounce for ounce, it actually costs more. And let's say you are doing some flexible budgetary shenanigans to justify it in the long term. I mean, that's still a net positive for the planet, right? If we're basically taking the existing matter that currently is set to rot in a landfill,
and
we're spending more money to convert it into a fuel, and then we deduct the previous, you know, carbon footprint from the new one, that don't seem bad.
Yeah. It's interesting to see the least. So Sky Aurora.
I like the way I proposed a theory. I indicted them. I assumed they were guilty, and then I justified why it's still okay.
Yeah.
So their Sky Aurora XL rocket is set to launch in 2022. So we will probably know more in the coming years. Hey, you guys want to see the sun?
I mean, I did once. I like it when it's hiding behind the moon.
Well, this one's not hidden. I'll show you here a picture.
Oh, I think I know what story this is. I think I saw this. Oh, my God. Do you know what, Justin, do you know what you're looking at right now?
No, I don't. It looks very, like, you could tell me it were, if you had not set it up with the idea that this is somehow sun-related, I would say it almost looks like, you know, some peek into the body or some kind of, you know, like bodily fluids.
It does. It almost looks like skin cells, right?
Yeah. But also it looks like,
there we go,
Cracker Jacks.
It does look a little like Cracker Jacks. Yeah.
This is the highest resolution photo of the surface of the sun, or I guess video. Yeah. Ever taken. Mm-hmm. And so you can see the coronas blarping out. You could see the I mean, it really looks like 1997 Kives power tools in Photoshop, but wow.
These cells, each of these individual bubble nodule cells, is about the size of Texas.
Wow.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So in fact, we have a
graph. These are all just combusting and exploding and just being awesome.
Yeah, so this is new footage from the
the
Inouye Solar Telescope. And thank you to Sunbun for posting this in the Discord. Just a little. It's always good to take a look at the stars.
Hey, so I got a question for you guys. You might have stumbled across this, Bryce, but Justin, what's your guess on the temperature of the surface of the sun?
Well, I mean, certainly it would be enough that Smash Mouth could walk on it.
However, they are made of diamonds, so keep that in mind.
Yeah, you might as well be walking on the sun, according to those jokers. I don't know. Wow, I couldn't even think of, you know, a billion D degrees. I have no clue.
Bryce, do you have a guess?
I don't know the answer to this. I would maybe guess, I mean, I don't know, 1,000,000 degrees Celsius.
You would think, but it's, let me double check this, but I believe it's 4,100 degrees Kelvin, which would make it just under 4,000 degrees Celsius, which would make it around, what, 8,000, 9,000 degrees?
6,700 Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
That's still hot. That is still hot.
It's still very hot, but so much colder than you would dare think, right? Yeah.
I guess it's a marathon heat, right? It's not, the sun's not exploding.
Correct. Yeah. It's not like a supernova, I'm sure. That's where you'll see those millions of degrees all at once. But as an ongoing furnace, that's roughly four times the heat of a campfire. Wrap your mind around that. It's about four times hotter than a campfire, only it's the mass of you know, hundreds and hundreds of Earths.
Oh, wow.
Apparently... a supernova can be as hot as 100 billion Kelvin.
That's more than 4,000.
It's more than 4,000. But goodness, that's incredible. I guess we take it for granted. Sun hot.
Yeah,
and that's
think about this. We have made fires on the planet Earth that are hotter than the surface of the sun. And it's not even that hard. In fact, I believe the temperature of like a lightning bolt is much, much more than the surface of the sun. Let me look up the temperature of the lightning bolt.
I mean, that would make sense because electricity. Well, I don't know. Justin, have you ever been struck by lightning?
I have never been struck by lightning. No, no, I am not. Although I was once by a campfire.
Oh.
Okay. So all right. We're gonna do a second round to our silly game that I just injected. What do you think the temperature of a lightning bolt is?
Because that's.
Oh, I'm gonna say half a billion D. I went a billion D for the sun. I'm gonna say half a billion D for the bolt of lightning.
Okay. Should I try to guess in Kelvin?
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, by the way, for the uninitiated, Kelvin is just Celsius minus, you know, with an extra
30
gap to absolute zero. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like 270, I think.
30 or 270. I don't know science. I would guess the sun is 4,000, so I would guess 6,000 Kelvin.
Get this. Depending on the various entries here, I see 30,000 Kelvin, 28,000 Kelvin, 30,000 Kelvin, 28,000 Kelvin. So
we need to send lightning to the sun. No, we want to stop global warming.
That's what that movie Sunshine forgot. Is like, why don't you just throw lightning at it, bro? Start it up again.
Yeah. We're going to shoot the sun with lightning.
All right. First, start the global shuffling of feet. Now, everybody, hold your finger up and approach slowly.
it starts to crackle, and then a gigantic, a lightning bolt forms. Billy Bob Thornton drops all of his papers on the floor as he's watching the monitors in the Pentagon.
What? Oh my goodness. Oh,
what?
You hear that?
Oh my gosh. Is that a sports song or a news song?
It's a sports song. The big game happened.
Yes.
And we have.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Of course, we have to recap. The Python Bowl!
Pythons versus spiders.
Are y'all ready for this?
So last week, the Python Bowl happened in Florida, the Florida Python Bowl, where people are encouraged to go and find and capture.
Oh, this is because pythons are an invasive species.
They're very invasive.
Yeah.
Oh, and this has been controversial. We've been covering this since it first went into effect out there in the Everglades. But it's controversial because everybody can agree that the pythons are invasive and that they are harming some of the natural resources out there. Mm-hmm. Everyone can agree that it's not ideal, but probably on a population level, you could take down that population. But it's very controversial, even with people who think that it would be great if all these pythons just drop dead tomorrow, because people that go out there don't realize that the Everglades are really dangerous. There's a million ways that things can go wrong, that you can injure yourself, if not kill yourself. And I think initially this was a more expansive thing. It was just like, hey, you can kill as many pythons as you want in the Everglades 24/7. And now restricted. So now, like, at the very least, you are going to not just have some random dude get drunk and go into the Everglades. This is going to be pro people who kind of know what they're doing if they can only do it for one day.
Well, so what I saw in the reporting is that you still can go and hunt pythons at any time as long as you have permission of the landowner.
Oh, maybe. Okay, yeah, maybe. Maybe they didn't restrict it then.
We got a little quiz for you. Python Bowl quiz. Catch it.
Go.
So the Python Bowl takes place over 10 days. How many pythons did the winner of the Python Bowl catch?
Ooh.
I'm gonna try to hide the fact that Bryce already showed the answer on screen.
No, I didn't.
And I will say somewhere between 79 and 81.
What's funny is I was gonna say 72, so that's the neighborhood. But I guess if I was gonna pick the over or the under, I'll take the over. I'll say 90.
No, so overall, hunters caught 80 pythons across the Python Bowl.
That's it.
That's the headline. Hunters put the squeeze on 80 snakes in Python Bowl. The single person who caught the most over the 10 days, how many did they catch?
Where's Hunter?
I'm going to guess that the winner is going to be the winner by a lot. So I'll say 20.
Say 20?
Yeah. I'll go even higher. I'll say 31 pythons. That somebody's got it on a rail, man. Like they know how to hunt pythons. Like no one's ever hunted them before.
Ooh, wow. The grand prize winner is Mike Kimmel. He caught 8 Burmese pythons.
That's not. Damn. That's as low as the temperature of the sun. that's much lower than I thought.
It's. I mean, they're big. Yeah. I think.
Well, you might as well be python hunting on the sun.
I wonder if it's captured, right? So I wonder if this is like you're not allowed to count kills. I bet you could kill a lot of pythons easier than capturing.
Why would there be a benefit to capturing them?
I guess for this bowl. Second question, the longest python that was caught, how long was it?
26 feet.
26 feet, says Brian.
Oh, wow, that's aggressive, but I think he's right.
Not as aggressive as these sails here on the sun.
35 feet.
Everything must go. 35. Hydrogen, helium.
You're both a little over. The longest python collected by Tom Rahill was 12 feet, 7.3 inches. And it was 62 pounds, the heaviest. He got $4,000.
62 pounds is the impressive figure to me on that one. That's a big one.
Mm-hmm. All right. So imagine you are literally out in the Everglades, which Ryan and I have been out on like a fan boat that was there to be picturesque. And even then you realize very quickly that you are in a world of trouble if your boat dies or
specifically we're all spoiled because, you know, in a GPS world, you know where you are or whatever. There are no markers. Like in a pre-GPS world, that engine goes out. I legitimately don't see how you track where you are at all.
You're just like, I guess I die. I'm dead now. But imagine you are out there and you know that means that you're probably out there in the morning when there's low visibility, at night when there's low visibility, and you catch a 12-foot python. I kind of feel like $4,000 is low. I feel like we need to get that up to $10,000. Like that is like that is shockingly low for the effort that it would take to get that money.
And that was a double prize. That was $2,000 for being the longest and $2,000 for being the heaviest.
Oh, imagine if you had to split it. How salty you'd be.
So
it's like congratulations, it's like, you got up at the crack of nothing, was there, captured it. Here is the fee for a magic performance at a community college.
Exactly, right? It's just like, oh, because Ted over there showed up with a 15-foot snake that is so thin like a jump rope, it doesn't weigh much.
So that's your Python Bowl, everybody. Big game, everybody. Good big game. You guys want to do picks?
Yeah, we'll do a pick. So I watched a show that I thought of watching all on my own with no help whatsoever. Nobody recommended it. I discovered it on my own. I evaluated it on my own. And I've decided that that I like The Outsider. It's slowing down mid-season for me.
This week's episode was very transitional. It was not a lot happened. But the previous four episodes are really strong.
Very strong, very bold start. I will comment also a bit of a preview of what's coming up on Cord Killer's spoilering time. The second episode of Picard was nowhere near in the same neighborhood as the first. I was really surprised by that. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It slowed down considerably, but we'll see.
I wonder how long that season order is.
8, 10, probably.
Like 8. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
That's not a good length to start slowing down on number two.
Well, but to some people, it'll start to feel more like traditional Star Trek, right? Because that was one of the complaints people had, is that it was too much like a movie and not enough like the TV show. But meanwhile, I'm like, oof, this is soft.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, like sometimes that Enterprise or that Next Generation pacing, you're like, whew. Man, can we just skip to the part where these aliens are obviously evil?
It's we're gonna walk all the way down this hall together, huh?
Yeah.
Now we're in an elevator, are we? Okay.
Yeah. I saw that they've got Picard, the first episode of Picard on YouTube, so I might give it a try via that. But do you think if you don't have much of a Star Trek lineage, that there's much there for you?
I think there'll be enough there for you. There's definitely a big nostalgia play, but by the second episode, maybe it was just this one episode, but it was almost like two separate shows. One where it's like, now those characters that we were developing with the intrigue and the plot and the things, and then just every so often go to an old man saying like, oh, and then go back. I mean, it was really weird.
Justin, you got a pick?
You know, obviously I've been all consumed with the caucus out here. So, my pick is going to be Arrested Development, which I go to sleep every night and watch Arrested Development because I just know that I'm not missing anything.
Oh, you know what? Along that line, let me give a tip of the hat. I don't think I've told you, Bryce. Bonnie and I started watching Schitt's Creek.
Oh,
it's great.
Oh. Isn't it?
It's really great.
Yeah. Final season is airing now on Pop.
Yeah, I'm only three episodes in right now, I think.
It's really good. And once they get into the groove of like developing the characters a little more, it gets even better, I think.
Yeah, you could tell that on the first couple of episodes, like just everybody is so imminently hateable. And it's like, well, this is unsustainable. They're going to have to make me like somebody at some point. And so I assume that happens.
Yeah, the show kind of, I think, makes the right choices on what elements to double down on, because there are like, there's a million different shows like that, right? Of like rich people mixing it up with the hoi polloi. But Schitt's Creek is just, it is remarkable for how much, like, I think the way that Dan Levy had described it in press for the news for the final season is that you realize that they're just aliens who have landed on Earth.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not their fault that they miss home, and it's not their fault that, you know, they find everything so strange. It is, you judge them for the fact that they have heart to try and make things better.
But, yeah, by the end of Comedy Murderers Row. By the end of the second episode, I mean, Eugene Levy is the closest to a likable character that you have in our main family. But like seeing Chris Elliott get Moira to slap him and the weird hungry sexual tension from his wife during it and all that was a pretty great moment when she turns around and slaps him.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so pumped for you to go through these seasons, because you know, there are moments by the second to last. I mean, I haven't seen any of the stuff that's aired so far, but it probably is the show that I love the most that's like on now that has like the biggest heart, you know. And even when, you know, there's something like Good Place, which obviously does trade on a lot of you know, this friendship and learning and growth and stuff like that, it doesn't have the same kind of just beating raw emotion of something like Schitt's Creek, which I was not expecting when initially I was like, oh, I guess it's, you know, just a lot of these best in show people doing another television show.
Hey, without spoiling anything, did you watch the last four endings of The Good Place?
No.
Okay.
I've been out here in Iowa.
Okay. Well, I mean, hot take, not a spoiler, but it's like felt like that show wrapped up, and then they had another episode that wrapped it up even tighter. Then they had two more episodes just wrap it up even more. It was really weird.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that on Cord Killers, cordkillers.com.
Yeah.
I got a pick. So I was watching the new season of BoJack Horseman. They put out the last episodes of BoJack Horseman, and that's now ended. And this is fine. But I got a recommendation from Tom Merritt about something that he uses to keep track of TV. And he got me onto Trakt, T-R-A-K-T. And I tried to log in, and I could not get it to log me in. But it's like a platform that follows, that knows what you watch. So I use an app called Watched, W-A-T-C-H-T, on the phone. And it knows what I'm watching, and I tell it when I watch something, and so it keeps a little carousel of like, here are the things that you're watching. You're watching True Detective, and you're watching The Witcher, and Terrace House and stuff. And also, like, it shows you the schedule of stuff that's coming up like a calendar view. And I really dig it. It's a really interesting way to keep track of stuff, and more than that, figure out what I want to watch, because I have not really gotten in the groove of using the Apple TV app, which has got its Up Next feature. I never really got into using that, and it doesn't
work. And in theory, that's what that is supposed to be, is the universal hub that guides you through all your stuff.
Right, but that doesn't track if you watch something on your computer, or if you watch something. Technically, it should work if you watch something on your phone. Most Netflix stuff in most regions doesn't work.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work with Netflix. Yeah. Like that's the big thing, is they're the 800-pound gorilla, so it's always going to have this massive hole in it. Although it is good, like there's some shows where I'll use the TV thing, but that's really, really cool. Trakt, you said?
Yeah, T-R-A-K-T. The free account has a bunch of stuff. There are plenty of free apps, so it's all like an API. So they don't have their own official app. There are a bunch of Trakt apps, like for your phone. If you use Plex or any sort of media server, it can actually scrabble what you watch. So if you have content from somewhere else, it will know that, and it will follow. It can track those automatically. I think it's really cool, and I really like it because it takes the guesswork out of like, what should I watch? I'm just looking at my Apple TV, and there's like, I don't know what to watch. So I can go and pull the thing up and say, oh, you know, I was watching Community. Why don't I keep watching Community? Oh, you know, I'm still in True Detective. I'm in a True Detective mood. I think it's a little bit of work to hit the button when you watch something, but I think it gets you out of that, like, the what do I watch question in a really good way.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's the tool you can use.
There you go. Trakt, everybody. All right. Well, that's going to do it here for Weird Things for Brian. And Justin.
And Jason. Keep going. It's great. Brant, you're crushing it.
And everyone else. it's been the Weird Things Podcast. It's been weird.
I like it when it's you that messes up and not me. That's fun.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.